Innovation and creativity are central to entrepreneurship. But what happens when you go beyond the edge? The Frontier Entrepreneurship Podcast brings you the world's first, the disruptive, the avant-garde. We take you to the frontier in conversation with the entrepreneurs who are the forerunners of the industries of the future. Get to know their world with co-hosts Braden Kemp and Tracy Morningstar. A crowded airport, endless lines of jets, a lot of flying, and a lot of emissions. Is there an opportunity? What if we could reduce the carbon footprint of private jet travel while providing wider access? Smaller capacity aircrafts actually offer a high level of safety, security, quality, and comfort. Seeing this opportunity, Canadian entrepreneur Sarah Patterson jumped in, and her startup has taken off, supported by our friends at the Canadian Council for Aboriginal Business. Today, we take you to the frontier of travel and transportation systems with JetSplits.
I'd like to welcome Braden. As always, I'm very excited about our next guest today.
Yeah, great to be here, Tracy. Good morning.
Today, we're taking you to the frontier with Sarah Patterson, CEO, founder of JetSplits. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I just searched an empty leg, found my destination, negotiated successfully the split of an empty leg. Now me and my family are off to Paris on a charter, sitting back, enjoying our best life. Sarah, is it really just as easy as that?
Yes. And actually, we further that. We now offer empty seats. So not just empty legs. Typically, when you fly commercially, you choose your seat. And so the whole private jet world has been operating around a whole flight, actually. So when we reviewed, when I first looked at, where's the gap in this market, or kind of stumbled on the gap in this market, we saw that there was a real need for pairing people up to fill seats. So if you are going to Paris with your family, you don't have to charter the whole plane. You could select your seats and then materially reduce the cost.
Sarah, for those of us like myself who've never flown private, how different is that experience from, your standard trip to the airport with a family of four on a busy weekend?
Yeah, and I'm not privy to flying private, at least before the pandemic. And I was fortunate enough to be able to, have a friend with a plane. And when you fly private, the convenience factor is, it's the best. You take your car, you drive it up to the plane, they'll park it for you. You bring all the stuff you want, any food, if you have kids, any food, baby food, bedding, whatever it is that you want. If you want to bring food, whatever it is that you would like to bring. And maybe we should not put the alcohol part in our podcast, but personally for you to know, whatever those items are that you particularly need that you can't necessarily bring on a commercial jet, you can kind of load them on. So you get to bring everything and anything that you really want, obviously within following the rules, but which means you just like walk right on the plane. And then when you they come on, they check, our passports and everything. And then when you land in a private airport as well, and you get off the plane and they scan all your stuff, security, and then you just drive right to wherever your destination is. So you skip out on the inconvenient hours of waiting at the airport, delays of, planes. If you're going to New York, often there are, flight delays. And so now you have sort of that, comfort zone of flying, when you've sort of booked it. Now, weather, permitting.
Got it. Makes sense. Thank you.
When you're talking about how you're able to have that sort of luxury into the plane and your needs are sort of met, who do you communicate with to set that all up within the plane?
So we're a white glove service. So JetSplits will handle all, requests that you may have. We'll set up everything from the moment you get out of, what's to take a step out of your house, to landing at, you know, the plane, what food you want on the plane, to when you land at the FBO, wherever your destination is, and then getting you from your destination to your, you know, a hotel or Airbnb, whatever it is that you may want to go to. We also will help, you know, locate some Airbnbs or hotels if you really need.
So, Sarah, who are the owners typically of these jets? Are they leasing companies? Are they private owners? Is it a mixture of both? And why aren't they, or if they are, how are they doing it differently, already selling empty legs or empty seats?
So operators are not allowed to sell empty seats. And operators, so there are a lot of operators that we use. We're like Airbnb or Uber, where we don't have our own planes. So we utilize all the operators out there around the world. It's basically, if you could think of it, almost like a puzzle that we're putting together. It's, we utilize these operators just like anyone would if you charter a plane. So if you charter a plane, you charter the plane to get you to your destination and then for the plane to actually reposition back. So if we're talking about Canada or Toronto, let's say, if you fly from Toronto to Florida, the plane will reposition back all the way to Toronto after it's dropped you off in Florida. And when you charter a plane, you have to pay for, you know, sort of both legs. So our premise is to pair people up and use the operator so that, you know, we can get the best use out of each plane. So when you fly private, these repositionings are called dead legs. And that's exactly what they are. They're dead. They kill the environment. You know, there's a carbon footprint sort of problem here when there is over a million empty legs around the world each year. So it's really about extending this beyond the ultra high net worth in corporations and closing that gap between business class and private jets.
So the customer that chartered the flight from Toronto to Miami, in essence, as part of their fee, they're paying for that plane to return empty anyways.
Yeah.
So there really hasn't been any sort of incentive to sell that leg or to fill that leg for the jet owners or the charter companies because it's already paid for. Is that fair to say?
Well, they operate, every operator is different and they handle sort of those legs differently and they'll help you out when they can. So that's, you know, super great, but it's only when they can and it's right out to their network. So with a more widely scaled network, you'd have more options.
Being a self-taught programmer at 15, graduating one of three women in information systems and speaking at Harvard Business School, does these milestones create that confidence as you continue to build your technology?
Well, you know, when I graduated as a woman, it wasn't really, you know, revered as much as it is maybe today. So, you know, my career, you know, and it took a pause for, you know, family and stuff. But when I was building out my career, it wasn't like it is now where you could be a proud Indigenous woman in tech building your career. It was very different back then. And I was obviously very proud of, you know, graduating. The only three women actually graduated. So it wasn't, you know, just three women of many. It was all three of us graduated, which, you know, we were all very proud. And growing up in a male environment was really tough. And so, you know, you really just sort of went through life doing what you could, as opposed to thinking that, you know, you could really succeed as a woman. Now it's very different. So as I start looking back on my, you know, sort of milestones or accomplishments, I actually say to myself, well, I can't believe I did that. Or, you know, I am proud that I did that because as I have three daughters of my own, you know, I'm teaching them to be proud of, you know, whether they're drawing a picture for, you know, whoever, for me or for school, or, you know, if they're, you know, competing in a triathlon at school, you know, you just be proud for what you've done and where you've gone. So as I'm preaching this to my daughters, I'm actually taking a look back at what I've done and going, yeah, I get to be proud too. So it is sort of a learning for myself as well. You know, I had a father who was very, very supportive and really drove business into me, which I'm so grateful for. He's now passed, but he taught me all these amazing lessons and, you know, sort of, you know, subtle hints about, you know, what I could do and where I could go without sort of telling me that, which I really appreciate. And, you know, had he been around, you know, he would see all of the great things, you know, he set me up for. And I hadn't realized that. So, you know, I really appreciate that.
Are you starting to see more representation from groups that have traditionally been underrepresented in technology? So I sort of work on the periphery of technology, but not inside technology companies. And there's this theme of, you know, the tech bro in technology companies. Is that changing now?
Not as fast as probably we'd like to see it. It's been a challenge to have, you know, find some indigenous tech people to hire, which I'm actively seeking. And so whereas you see, you know, a lot of coders will, you know, there's a lot of coders, you know, from Ukraine or from South Africa or, you know, sort of coming out of school, India, you know, if it would be nice to see more underrepresented, you know, sort of communities like the Indigenous community. And I just don't think we're there yet. And hopefully with JetSplits, we're, you know, changing the narrative on what Indigenous people can do, you know, and where, you know, you can go in life. And especially for, you know, females, you can be a tech. You can be a techie as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's great to see that kind of attitude. And we've spoken with a number of people who've said that from the, you know, the inside of the tech community, and the answers tend to be similar, that change is coming, but it's not as rapid as it should be.
Yeah, absolutely.
In creating a culture of success amongst your team, what do you see as your future employee and the character traits that you're looking for?
Well, we're looking for the skill set. I think the world really does need to hire on a skill set versus ticking a box. I think we really sort of, you know, we're trying to accomplish the right thing. But I think that if we can really focus on, you know, driving the confidence into different communities, underprivileged communities, then we can sort of have those people come up with the skill sets. So, you know, we have different job opportunities. So it just really does depend on the job opportunities, but they have to fit the skill set.
I want to maybe jump back to sort of better understanding commercial flights, private flights, and that sort of thing. Commercial flights are extremely tightly regulated. You've almost, in some sense, created a new category of flight here. Are there regulatory hurdles or changes that had to be made before you could bring this service to the market?
Yes. So I hired a lawyer who actually is also Indigenous to help me go through all the hoops that I needed to with my legals and insurance before I could, you know, sort of start that. And that took quite a bit of time. But yes, those are all sort of confidential legal matters. But yes, we went through a series of months of preparing to make sure that this is done and done right.
Makes sense. And then, you know, with those changes and this sort of, I guess I'm I would maybe call it a somewhat of an opening of private flight to a new market. Was there any pushback from the industry in terms of a desire to keep the private air travel ultra exclusive, or has the industry been accepting?
Well, the industry, the private jet industry is exploding, and it's continuing to explode. I think it, so here's how I explain it. So basically before Uber, if you wanted a black car to pick you up and bring you to your destination, whether it be a lunch, a business meeting, a private event, a dinner, you had to pay the black car to pick you up. It would sit and wait for you, you know, all day or a minimum amount of hours, and then it would return you back home or wherever you come from. So, you know, and this costs thousands and thousands of dollars. And so really it was only for the ultra high net worth and corporations. And, you know, sort of you have that, the taxi cabs where, you know, they were waiting. You can most certainly call, but, you know, wasn't the most convenient until Uber came along. And it was originally called Uber cabs, and then they changed it to just Uber. But Uber basically disrupted the market in, you know, were people upset? Yes. But is it, has it offered a service that wasn't there before? And now you can get a black car for $50 or $100. So it's just sort of adjusting to the technology, you know, and sort of, I think in, from your televisions to your clocks to your TV or your fridges, you know, all of this technology is coming out and it's bringing new opportunity. The same as Airbnb. So Airbnb, you know, if you wanted to, you only really could rent from a hotel or, you know, say if you knew someone in Barbados, you could rent their house from them. Now you have much, much more opportunity being able to rent someone's villa or, you know, their house or, you know, a bedroom, making it, you know, more feasible and a lot more opportunity for everybody. So it is it's a changing time. And here's how I would explain it. So far, there's been no real pushback. When I have conversations with operators, I tell them that I'm an aggregator. They already have the ultra high net worth and corporations that they're working with. And they're going to stay like that, you know, and it is exploding. So there are more people wanting to fly private post pandemic. But there are also an aggregated amount of people who are also flying post pandemic. So those who wanted to travel, but couldn't travel or wouldn't travel on a commercial plane. So they paired themselves up. So they started, you know, fly sharing. And so the whole ride sharing because of Uber and the house sharing because of Airbnb, the whole premise has already been accepted. So now with moving forward, the fly sharing, we're extending it. So really the operators and the memberships and the plane owners, they're all going to have what they already use as a service. And if they like it, they'll stick with that. What we're doing is we're aggregating more people. So we're bringing the operators, the flight owners, more people to fly. So when you own a plane, if that plane sits, it's just burning money. If you have people who are flying it or renting it or chartering it is the terminology, then it actually becomes a little bit more of an asset versus something that's just sitting there only when you want to fly it. So there's a lot of benefits to having, you know, aggregating more people that typically would never fly private unless they were offered this opportunity.
Interesting. I guess the market is a little different. I sort of had filed it in that same category of the type of business that could see the pushback that, for example, Airbnb saw from the hotel industry or Uber saw from the yellow cab industry. You're not really displacing anybody from a realm of business that they were already in. You're more just creating new opportunity for a customer that didn't exist before.
Yeah, I'm trying to bring them new people.
In building your customers, you had talked about marketing. How are you marketing the product? And like, how do you build that network to market?
So I spent a few years building out the proprietary software and then throwing up a beta version. In that beta version, I went to our basically a Rolodex. My husband does a lot of business around the world, so I was fortunate enough to be able to sort of call upon those people. And when I realized that there could be an opportunity here to solve the capacity utilization problem, I sort of went for it. And so now what I'm doing is I'm marketing it to, you know, basically anybody and everybody we know, as we're still building out the technology. So we're still building out the technology and then working with different sorts of groups and partnerships to sort of have a pipeline coming up kind of thing.
You mentioned, you know, being in the process of still building out the technology and I assume sort of fine-tuning the business model. What does success look like 5 or 10 years from now for JetSplits?
It looks like a household name, like Airbnb and Uber, with a coined term, you know, we're jet splitting. Are you jet splitting today? We're going to jet splits our way to Florida. We're going to jet splits our way to Paris. And, you know, while giving back to the indigenous community, you know, really helping, you know, our people. And success, you know, to me would mean if it's dropping Starlink into a reserve and having customer service, you know, back end support from people who live on the reserves, being able to help Indigenous people, you know, have stable jobs, you know, where we can use the technology and be able to deliver great service.
That's neat. I like the anecdote of, you know, having a catchphrase like that. I've asked that question to a lot of people and I haven't had that answer come back before. That's very cool.
Well, you Uber everywhere and you're going to go, you're going to go on Airbnb. And so, you know, and look, there's a lot of, you know, people trying to solve this capacity utilization problem. I do think a name is important. And so, I feel, you know, if you can split the jet, you know, with other people and it works for you, then, you know, why not? Let's go jet splits.
Private air travel has been in sort of the news lately, coming under the microscope from an environmental perspective. Do you see jet splits as an opportunity for these private operators, charter companies, et cetera, to do better environmentally, but also maybe to help clean up their public image?
Yeah, I'm hoping that, you know, tackling this dead leg carbon footprint waste, you know, that they'll welcome it, you know, as opposed to push back. I think everyone's trying to do their part and, you know, you can donate some money towards a program, but that's not good enough. You know, we shouldn't have empty legs, dead legs just flying back empty. You know, we should be able to, you know, utilize what's out there to be able to fill them. They're going to fly. So, you know, it's like a commercial plane. So if we can minimize the amount of wasted flight, you know, I think it would help the reputation a lot. It's, you know, whether it's commercial flights or private flights, you know, it's not great for our carbon footprint at all. But you know, everyone is going to continue to fly. So we might as well do what we can instead of, we might as well try to accomplish, you know, what we have and make it the best in what we're doing.
You feel like that's an issue that the operators are aware of? Like, are they thinking about that or is it part of your pitch to them to say, hey, you know, these empty legs are not looked at kindly and we can help you with it?
I just think it's not their business. It's operating planes, you know, operators, you know, the memberships, you know, or flight owners. It's not their business. And so, you know, they're trying. There's definitely people who are trying. And then it's just the lack of being able to execute it. You know, if you don't have anyone to fill that leg, you don't have anyone to fill that leg. So it's just, you know, it's their business. So I think, you know, there's a lot of businesses that need to look at how to do better to save our earth and what we can do better. And I think, you know, when you have so many individual operators, they're not sort of coming together, you know, necessarily. They're not talking together necessarily all the time. So, you know, with a program like this, you know, where we can come in and help accomplish that, you know, it hopefully will be welcomed. And that way we can start, you know, also filling, you know, those empty legs and working towards a better, you know, environment. But if we also, in addition, can give back, you know, we have been looking at programs and how to implement programs, you know, as we get busier to give back to our carbon footprint, whether it's planting trees or doing, you know, specific contributions. You know, I think that's really great. And I do see a movement with operators or corporations that are like, you know, some of the other larger operators or memberships, you know, they are giving back that way. So everybody wants to do their part. It's just, how do you do that? And how do you do it the best way possible? So, you know, we're going to hopefully provide an opportunity here that they can take us up on.
Yeah, that's great.
You had mentioned Sarah Blakely as someone who has inspired you. What is it about her that inspires you?
Well, she started her company, you know, with $5,000. And you know, she had an idea and she went for it. And at the time, it wasn't a conventional idea of, you know, are people going to welcome this? I mean, it's blown up since. But the one thing that, you know, I really admire is that she kept it public. You know, she didn't make a, you know, she kept her company public, and she's building an empire. And she's, you know, paving the path for women to do the same thing. You know, look at Airbnb and Uber. And I say those because, you know, I'd really admire both companies. But they're both male founders and in the U.S. So, you know, it's nice to see female founders being able to, you know, trailblaze their path, you know, through. And then it's inspiring for other women and our young girls. We can do it all. It's not an easy balance, but we certainly can do it all. So if you have women who are already doing this, you know, then you can see it. It's done. As you get older, you get wiser because you experience things. So, you know, when these are the things that we teach and pass along to our children. You know, when you have when you have companies that are all male dominant, you know, it's not easy to think that as a woman you can also do the same thing. So when you have these female figures that are paving the path, you know, it gives you the confidence that you too can do anything.
You mentioned that you have three daughters. How do you balance that schedule of starting a, you know, a technology company and growth company and all of the schedule constraints that come with that with family life?
I struggle. I've always been an entrepreneur, and I've always sort of worked, except for sort of a period of time. I didn't work as much, but after I had my first daughter, my father actually passed away on the same day that she was born. So that sort of sent me into a whirlwind, and I took a pause. So when I decided to launch this new tech company, it actually just started as an idea, and then to figure out a solution that I saw a problem, and then it just kept building and building. So naturally it was, you know, my time was much more devoted to my children. And then now I'm all day, every day on this tech company. So, you know, I value a company that supports a family. I'm a big family person. So, you know, I value a company that supports that. So if that means that you have to go and pick up your kids at 3 o'clock and you're pausing for an hour, you know, as long as there's nothing urgent, you know, please go pick up your kids and do that and then come back and then finish up. So, you know, I think we have to support women and men who are raising families to be able to do both. I think there is a lot of value in being there for your children, not just working. And I think post-pandemic, you know, everyone sort of got a little bit of a taste of that, maybe more than they wanted at times with the homeschooling. But you know, it's great, I think, to be able to try to at least balance that. I am running nonstop from the moment I get up till, you know, late night hours when I'm finalizing emails or looking at, you know, documents, whatever we're working on that day. So it is definitely more challenging. And more challenging, I would say, for me than my husband. You know, he, I, you know, very much focused on the kids, and he works a lot as well. So, you know, when he can, he helps and he steps in. But, you know, he's on a plane flying out every other week, you know, for a business meeting. So just, you know, due to location, if he's not around, then it's all me. So it's always me, you know, taking care of the kids. And it's always me, you know, running the business and, you know, making sure we have, you know, whatever we have for dinner. Like, I have to balance everything. It's not just, you know, parenting and business. It's the whole life that we live that needs to be balanced. So, you know, one of the things that I do that I've passed along to a bunch of people who've asked me is, and I don't know if you have kids or not, so if you do, this is very valuable. And I learned this trick through a parenting, it's called positive parenting solutions. And what you do is you spend 10 minutes with your children, you know, consistently at the same time every day. So we picked before bed, and we've named it each with my daughters. We give it our own name, and I put my phone down. And that's the key to it, because I think technology is so great when it's working. And but, you know, our kids may not find it so great when they're trying to get our attention. So you put your phone down for 10 minutes and you ask them, what do you want to do? And they tell you what you want to do. I want to play cards. I want to draw. You know, I want to play a game. And we do that for 10 minutes. We put a timer on. When the timer is up, you know, I share with them how valuable it is to me and how much I enjoyed our time together. And then that sets them into a nice bedtime routine, because they feel like their bucket's filled. We feel like our bucket's, I feel like my bucket's filled, and everybody's happy. And so just those 10 minutes, you know, each and every night really do help a lot. So there's sort of these sort of things that I'm working on and learning as I go, how to make it, you know, a much more, less guilty balance.
I think that's great advice for anyone who's a parent and trying to run a business or has a regular 9-to-5 job. So I have a 6-month-old and something that that's new for me is, you know, remembering, hey, put that phone down and just be present in the moment. So I appreciate that detail and that answer.
Yeah, I think this is a good way to end the conversation. Thank you very much, Sarah. It was very nice having you.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be right back after this short break.
The Canadian Council for Aboriginal Business builds bridges between Indigenous and non-Indigenous peoples, businesses, and communities. CCAB offers a diverse array of programming, including training, networking, major business awards, and national events. Head to ccab.com to explore resources, connect, and help build a new economy based on mutual respect and shared prosperity.
We return to the Frontier Entrepreneurship Podcast with co-hosts Braden Kemp and Tracy Morningstar.
Another awesome interview with Sarah. I appreciated her conversation about jet splits being the possible next Uber.
Yeah, it's interesting. You have the companies that she referenced, like Airbnb and Uber, which are essentially, you know, picking up excess capacity, in various markets. It's sort of surprising to me that this is a business model that hadn't already been explored. And that's, I think, what makes it interesting and potentially quite lucrative for Sarah and her company. There's an obvious need to fill empty space on flights. And so why don't we fill it? I love companies that seem to have an obvious solution that no one's come to yet.
Yeah. Using jet splits as, yeah, that's the next word in that we're going to be using in the future. Having the convenience of travel is something that we could all appreciate 100%.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I wonder, you know, she mentioned that the private air travel industry is growing like crazy. Now, often, not always, but often with scale, you see prices coming down, and maybe, you know, shared private air travel isn't all that out of reach for the general public.
Yeah, more affordability for sure. We would all love that. Another thing too that she talked about was family and community, giving back. Always when we talk to these entrepreneurs, they're always talking about giving back their time, their energy, committing to the environment, committing to what they're passionate about. And she obviously has passion for her family and community.
Yeah, it's great to see. It's great to see companies and these people, these entrepreneurs that are starting and growing these companies, not just focused on, you know, the dollar, raising venture capital and selling the company for billions or whatever it might be. They're just regular people with the same sort of pressures and commitments that you and I have, and it's neat to talk to them about it.
I'd like to just take time to thank Sarah for joining us for today's podcast, and you, Braden.
Thanks, Tracy. Always a pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you for joining us on the Frontier Entrepreneurship Podcast. See you all again next time.
This edition of the Frontier Entrepreneurship Podcast was made possible with the support of FedDev Ontario and the Government of Canada. Special thanks to Victoria Pitchler. The executive producer of Frontier Entrepreneurship is Robert Washburn. I'm John Hayden. To find out more, head to our website, ncfdc.ca. That's ncfdc.ca. Thanks for listening.